Welcome to 21. I'm Drew Lasker. I'm a family man, professional athlete, and business owner of Train Harder 21 and 21 Media. Yvonne Harris and I have teamed up and created this podcast to explore the life lessons that come along with being an athlete. Why 21? It's my jersey number and a key part to my great fortune and career. So it seems fitting for this podcast.
Hi, I'm Yvonne Harris. I'm a proud boy mom and an advocate for efforts that improve the lives of women and children. Experiencing success as an athlete or in any facet of life does not happen by accident. There must be clarity, intention, and the willingness to pivot. Our guests on 21 share their journeys in ways that cause you to reflect, assess, and then take action. We are so thankful for the stories shared on this podcast because Drew and I know their wisdom shortens someone else's path to success. Enjoy this episode of 21.
Welcome back to 21. The game of basketball has evolved over the recent years, from relying on big men such as Hakeem Olajuwon and Shaquille O'Neal to take you to the promised land, to this new era of pace and space where shooting from every position is a requirement. It's safe to say that today's guest would fit right in, as he's the record holder for three-point field goals in an NCAA tournament game with 11. Now, he passes the skills down to the next generation as the executive director at Fryer Basketball Academy, also known as FBA. We welcome to the show, Jeff Fryer. What's up, old friend? Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Drew. It's great to be here. You know, I followed your career a little bit as well, and it looks like you're doing great things in England. So it's great to reconnect after all these years. It's been a while, but I know you've had a lot of success over there, and it's great to see that. So thanks for having me.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, great to meet you, Jeff. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, you bet. It's great to be here. I'm always willing to share a little bit about myself, and hopefully that inspires and encourages others with the life, the direction my life has gone in, at this time. So I'm thankful.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I'm excited to dive into your story because it's so fascinating. But before we do, I know you used to, but do you still handle pressure well?
Yeah, I've learned over the years to especially leading this academy as the founder of this basketball academy that I run now, to lead people. I mean, I lead coaches, kids, and parents, and there's some pressure in that, but I've learned techniques to dive into that. And primarily, God has really helped me with that and given me peace about all sorts of different things in my life. But we can get into that later. But yeah.
I want to put you under a different type of pressure. Right. I want to put you on a hot seat in a game called 21 questions with 21. So I know at this point of your career, those hamstrings are probably tight, Jeff, but no warm up. We're diving straight in, man. So Chick-fil-A or Whataburger?
Chick-fil-A.
Beer or tequila?
Beer.
Beach or mountains?
Beach.
Twitter or Instagram?
Instagram.
Tupac or Biggie?
Tupac.
Jordan or LeBron?
Jordan.
Popeyes or Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A.
Las Vegas or Miami?
Miami.
Action or rom-com?
Action.
IHOP or Waffle House?
Waffle House.
East Coast or West Coast?
West Coast.
Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Car or truck?
Truck.
Netflix or Hulu?
Netflix.
Sprite or Dr. Pepper?
Dr. Pepper.
Summer or winter?
Summer.
Xbox or PlayStation?
I've never played either, but I'll say Xbox.
Dishes or laundry?
Oh boy, laundry.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
Homemade or takeout?
Homemade.
And finally, club or house party?
House party.
But wait,
the laugh though.
No, we brought back some memories back to his Leyla Merriman.
I think we did.
You are now on the hot seat, my man.
Yeah, that was interesting. Because, you know, is it 21 because that's your number?
Yeah.
You know, that's my number too. We talked about that before.
Of course, man. Of course I know. For the listeners, Jeff is also 21. So obviously you can already feel the chemistry going in on today's show.
Yeah, so 21 is a really great number. So all the little ones listening, you get to pick your jersey number next season if 21 is available.
There we go. But before we dive in, Jeff, just share with our listeners where you're from.
I'm from Southern California. So actually, I live in Tustin, California right now. It's in Orange County, and been living here a while since I retired from basketball. In 2001, I was playing in Europe for a long time, but I stopped and then moved back to this area. So that's where I live now.
Jeff, when did you start playing basketball, and was it the only sport that you played?
I started playing with my brothers and their friends. They're older than me, and they would kind of rough me up when I drive into the lane and try to score a layup. That's why I learned to shoot outside. And you know, I was either get beat up or shoot outside. I did tried it many times, and I ended up on my tail. But probably like first grade, I think, is when I started. And I played all sorts of sports. I played football, baseball, all the traditional sports. And I also love surfing as well. I started that when I was about 11, and I still do that today. I don't play much basketball anymore, but I do get out in the water because when you fall in the water, and it doesn't hurt.
Was basketball your favorite sport? Was it the sport you were best at, or both?
It was one of my favorites, but I was good at it. And I think God blessed me with good hand-eye coordination from an early age. So I was able to shoot the ball pretty well from an early age. So I excelled in it. And I decided to just drop all other sports after my sophomore year of high school and just focus on basketball because I figured I might have a career or an opportunity to get a scholarship to college playing basketball. So that's what happened.
I think you figured right. That was a good bet. But what were you like in high school, like even as a student?
What was I like?
Yes.
I was, I probably was more interested in basketball and girls than in studying, which I think most people are like. But, you know, I passed my classes and had good enough grades to get in college and earn that scholarship. So that was really important for me to get an education. That was the most important thing going into college. And we did have success at basketball. So that was just an added bonus. And who knew that I'd play overseas for so long, but wasn't really planning on it until I had a good couple of years, my junior and senior year in college. So that's kind of how it worked out.
So you were interested in basketball and the girls, but to our listeners, you also made time for your studies. And were you a good test taker? Did you do good on those advanced level or those standardized tests?
I was a guy that had to really study in order to do well on tests. You know, I wasn't, you know, some people are just naturally gifted with that kind of smarts, but not me. I really had to study and earn everything I got. So, yeah, it didn't come easy to me, but I just had to work on it like I, you know, you got everything. Hard work brings a profit, you know, so that's kind of where I was at with that.
And what college options did you have?
I had probably about 20 or 30, but when it came down to it, I chose a school that Loyola Marymount was a school I chose because they came to all the games I played good. Schools I wanted to go to, they came to all the games I played poorly. But Loyola and a couple other schools came to all my good games. It's just interesting how the timing worked out with that. So that was kind of how it unfolded for me.
I think it happened like that for a reason.
Yeah, for sure. All things happen for a reason.
And when you actually got an opportunity to get on the college campus, what was it that you loved about Leyla Marymount?
Well, first of all, Paul Westhead was the coach. He had coached the Lakers to the NBA championship in 1981. He got the job at Loyola in 85, and I was his first player that signed with him because he came to my campus at high school and walked around campus with me and had his NBA championship ring And he said, we sat on the bench together, and he's like, Jeff, if you come to Loyola, I'll give you the green light to shoot it every time you touch the ball. And I was like, whoa. And I was like, that's great. I figured, you know, what better resume could a coach have than winning the NBA championship? And so I was like, I'm in. And sure enough, to his word, he let me shoot the ball every time I touch it. So he was a man of his word. And when I got to Loyola, we were okay. You know, Bo Kimball and Hank Gathers, they signed a couple of weeks after I did, who are, you know, were the really good players on our team for the next 4 years. So it was great to get that thing going once we stepped on campus.
And when you reflect back on your time at Loyola, for any younger athletes that's listening now, obviously with FBA, I'm pretty sure you have to do this often, but what advice do you give those young kids who has ambition of playing at the college level?
Well, it's important to be realistic with them, but at the same time, don't kill their dreams, you know, because only a small percentage of guys make get a scholarship to college or be able to play in college, even less play pro ball. So I think the most important thing is that they work hard enough and they have talent and they get good grades and keep their studies up, then I encourage them in that, you know. But at the same time, it's important to be realistic and know that not everybody's going to make it and not to put all your eggs in one basket.
Right. You spoke earlier about how you had to really work at your academics. So we all know when you get to the college level, your sport, whether it's football, basketball, whatever, it's pretty much like a full-time job. The amount of time you have to spend in that sport, but you're also a student as well. So you have to balance that academic side as well, that class schedule. So just talk to us a little bit about your daily schedule and how you balanced all of that, knowing that Paul Westhead was your coach. He was a demanding coach. You guys obviously had to be in phenomenal shape to run the kind of system that he installed. How did you make time for everything else?
There wasn't much time. And when there was time, you're typically pretty tired out, you know, from all the running and practice and the weightlifting and games and on the road. And but you have to make time. You have to have good time management. And we had a study hall for the guys like me or whoever that needed help, you know, to get through their classes and pass their classes. So that was very helpful. And I had to have good time management. I think most people have to do that, you know, and especially nowadays, and running a business as an adult, you have to have good time management. And I try to have that today.
So. Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough balance because, like you say, it's such a heavy load. And for an 18, 19-year-old kid, that's something you have to learn on the fly. No one can really prepare you for that. But I want to take you back. So the date I want to take you back to is Sunday, March 4th. So you guys are playing in a WCC semifinals against Portland. Ironically, my college coach was on the sidelines as an assistant coach. Miami Heat's Eric Spoelstra is there. There's 13:34 left in the game. And just talk to us about what happens next.
Well, that was the day my teammate Hank Gathers passed. But, you know, it was just a tough time, you know. Didn't know. We thought he just kind of fainted again, but because he had fainted in the game two or three months prior. And, you know, I thought he'd get right back up because he was kind of a practical joker type of a guy, but he didn't. And it was kind of a whirlwind of events that followed by us accepting the bid to the NCAA tournament. And that's when we made a run without our best player and made it to the final eight. So I think, you know, got me thinking a lot about life and death, but it was just a tough time for our team, but we rallied. And sometimes I think about it, you know, looking back, that it was his time. You know, everybody has a time on this earth. That was his time. It was pretty dramatic fashion, alley-oop dunk and fainting at half court and passing away. But, you know, that's the way I have to look at it.
Yeah, it must have been incredible for a 21-year-old to have to go through something like that. But like you mentioned, you guys rallied as a team, and a couple of weeks later, following this tragic event, on March 18th in 1990, you became the NCAA record holder for 3-point field goals made in a tournament game. Just talk to us a little bit about that achievement and where that inspiration come from. And how crazy is it that it's been, what, 31 years and it's still the record? Like, especially the way the game is played now, where there's more threes launched than ever and it's still held up. It must be something you're proud of.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I watch the tournament every year. I remember 2 years ago, Carson Edwards from Purdue had 10 threes with 5 minutes left in the game. Didn't make another when the game went into overtime, and he didn't make another in the final 5 minutes of overtime. So I was kind of sweating on that one, but it was pretty exciting to watch it and just know that my inspiration and really came from my coach. When I mentioned that he would give me the green light, he was true to his word. I think all players need a coach like that, that'll encourage them, give them confidence. And that's what he gave me. You know, I didn't always have games like that, but a lot of them were. And that's because I had a coach that had my back. And that's why I coach today and run an academy for kids, because I try to hire coaches that inspire and encourage rather than tear down and drag down. And I see that a lot in club basketball and AAU basketball, you know, but we try to do it for the right reasons, teach them the right things, and do it for the right reasons.
Yeah. And one thing that we talk about a lot on this show, in particular, Yvonne, is about having a sponsor, and a coach is kind of similar to that sponsor, kind of seeing something in you that maybe you don't see yourself. And through the coach's confidence in you, you were able to continue your career after college. You had workouts with the Suns and the Houston Rockets and played for several countries overseas. So just talk to us a little bit about that journey post-college.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I originally went to the Phoenix Suns and played in their training camp, and they had invited me back, but my agent said to go to Houston, and I was playing some of my best basketball with the Suns. But I went to Houston. They played a summer with them. They had a guy that they drafted, a two guard. So once they signed him, then I was gone. So then I ended up playing in the CBA for a couple of years, which is like the G League equivalent today. Played for George Karl, some big coaches. And then I went to Germany and played there for 5 years. It's funny because talk about Art Wilmore, your college coach, and Eric Spoelstra. Eric Spoelstra became a really good friend of mine because we played together in Germany for a couple of years. He was on a team nearby, but we hung out a lot because the Americans hang out a lot. He was in the same league, but they're some of my best friends today. Your college coach and Eric are some of my best friends today, because not only because of that time back in college when they were on the same court when Hank Gathers tied, but it's interesting that we have that in common. But I made a lot of friends along the way, and post-college, I had a long career playing. It was great playing a sport for a living. But at some point, which I tell guys now that I coach, you got to have a plan B. And I didn't really have a plan B. That's all I knew was basketball. Played it since I was a kid and really needed to think about what I was going to do next. And so it wasn't until I hit some hard times that I had to turn to actually Jesus Christ, who changed my life around, and I accepted him as my Lord and Savior and set me on a new path, which I'm thankful for to this day, because it changed my life. I made a 180 and I haven't looked back. My testimony as well to his goodness in my life, and he's given me peace and joy, and thankful.
And I think it's safe to say that God has truly blessed you, and you've definitely found your calling. But one thing that I just want to mention is just how difficult it is to make it to the NBA. When you think about someone of your caliber, your resume, your achievements, and still to fall short of the NBA, it just puts it in perspective of how difficult it really is to get to that level, and hence why it's so important to have that plan B, like you mentioned.
That's right, because when I was playing in with the Suns and the Rockets, there's so many guys that have just tremendous. I mean, there's athletes. Gosh, they're just slammed. I couldn't even dunk. We had a drill with the Suns where everybody had to take the ball from half court, drive down the court, and dunk it. I was the only guy that couldn't, but I could shoot better than all those guys.
Right.
So that's the thing, you know, there's so many good players, so many good athletes. It's just a small fraction of them make it. And I think the difference is they have the IQ, the basketball IQ edge. That's really important, you know, have that little edge as far as knowing what play to make, how to make it, and being a good team guy. If you're not like a tremendous score, or like a James Harden or Russell Westbrook. I mean, a guy like me, I just had to do the right things and play a role, but it's hard. It's really tough to make it. And, you know, as you know, too, but you and I carved out good careers overseas, which is fantastic. You know, there's nothing wrong with that either.
You definitely played to your strengths, Jeff. But before we get too far from the point, can we go back to your transition from Phoenix to Houston? What was the thought process? Because I think I heard you say as well that you were playing your best ball at Phoenix. So why did you make the move?
Well, I was originally supposed to go there according to my age, Houston. Phoenix was just kind of a warm-up. But then I wasn't expecting for them to like me that much. And it was kind of interesting because I couldn't get a hold of my agent when they asked me to come back. And I tried to reach him for like a couple of days, but I couldn't. And then when I left, he said, no, I'll just go to Houston because that's your original plan. Even though Phoenix wanted me back and they liked me a lot, it was too late. They said they'd take me back. It didn't work out in Houston, and they didn't take me back. It was a series of events, but it all worked for the good. I can't look back and regret anything. It was, who knows what would happen, but just try to look forward.
Everything happens for a reason, and I'm sure you believe that.
Yeah.
I know that you just touched upon pivot to starting to think about life after basketball. To those that you coach now, to those that you mentor now, what advice do you give them? Because it is that balance that you talked about. You don't want people to think that their dreams won't come true, mm-hmm. but you have to be realistic and maybe even a little bit deeper. You have to understand that it just may not be intended for you.
Right.
So how do you coach people to plan again for life after basketball?
Just to have, you know, a backup plan, because everybody has to hang up the basketball shoes at some point. Could be after high school organized basketball. I mean, could be after college, could be after pro, but you're going to have to hang it up, not rely on your body, but on your mind. So that's really important, what I tell kids too. They can play in city leagues and stuff like that until they're 40 or 50, but organized ball, they got to give it up at some point. Not necessarily because they want to, but because they have no choice. And so that's kind of the tips I give them, the advice, the counsel to have a plan B, you know, whatever that is. If it's big planning, like Andrew, Drew, you got a lot of stuff going on as far as entertainment wise, or, you know, with your interviews and things. I'm sure you're planning for life after basketball too, right?
What our listeners don't know is that you were an agent earlier in my career. And so you've seen this whole process develop, and me starting my career off not getting a job for a full year. I was always in that mindset that this can end anytime. So I'm blessed that it started that way and it happened that way, because had it not, I'm not too sure I can say that I would be plan B lined up and be doing all these other things while playing. So it ended up being a blessing in disguise for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, that's encouraging for me to see where you're at and what you're doing now. It's just testament to your hard work and work ethic and dedicated, like it says on your shirt.
Well, and Jeff, just know that you were part of Drew's journey too. The seeds that you sowed in him some years back are reaping right now. And the beautiful thing about your story, at least from my perspective, is that you've had the most influence off the court. And you've blessed so many people. You've paid it forward time and time and time again. So talk to us about how the Friar Basketball Academy came to be.
Well, I originally started coaching after I got back from Europe in like 2001, 2002. I coached at Servite High School. Actually, Drew came and helped me with some camps early on.
Yep.
And coached at Servite High School, and then coached at Azusa Pacific University, which was in the same league as Drew's. I was coaching assistant women's coach, and I was helping the men too at the time. But I was training kids and running camps at the same time, and I was an agent. I was representing guys and going overseas, so I was doing a lot of things. But I stopped coaching in college because I wanted to settle down in one place and not have to travel. And it was just a different lifestyle as a assistant college coach. So I started just coaching camps and training kids. And then I also was doing this agency sports business, and I quit that in 2008. And then I got into investment banking for 5 years. and then took a leap of faith after that because I knew that wasn't my calling. I just decided to do basketball full-time in 2011. And so a friend of mine, actually through Eric Spolstra, he knew a guy in Northern California Academy who helped me get mine started. And so I was off to the races, and it went from a couple teams to, you know, and camps and training kids to growing to about 12 teams. And currently we have 8. But it's been up and down, but gradually growing. And we just try to be a good influence on kids, positive encouragement. We have, you know, like I said, 8 teams, and we do a lot of camps and clinics. We're moving into a building on July 1st as a training center, a half court.
Wow.
Some offices, and coaching kids up and training them to shoot right and get their skills right, whatever that is. And get after it, you know. So we have some good coaches on our staff. We have 7 coaches, and they do a great job. And I'm looking forward to the future because hopefully we can do some good things. Just taking it one day at a time. And, you know, can't boast about tomorrow because I don't know what today's going to bring, but we're hoping for a good future to be a good influence on kids.
Well, when you started in basketball, you mentioned the role that your older brothers played in helping you navigate your way through the game. But as you know now as a coach, when you're coaching a player, that player has a very strong support system, most often with family. What were some of the greatest things that your family did to support you? And then how do you give advice to parents on how to best support their children who are playing?
That's a good question. You know, my parents were very supportive. They came to all my high school games and most of my college games. My dad would even go to all my college games on the road too. So they were very supportive and just wanted the best for me. But he just decided to watch too and see his kid on the court. But for parents on the sidelines and in our academy, you know, we have guidelines just because the coach should be coaching them and not the parent from the sidelines. No, they should be encouraging their kids and not coaching them from the sidelines, because a kid gets confused sometimes when he hears from both and looking both ways. So that's one of the things. And then, you know, just to be encourage them, not to like take apart their game on the drive home from the game, but just say, great game, Johnny, or whatever. And maybe later talk about their game or whatever, but just to be supportive of them and encouraging, I think is really important, because, you know, kids have so much going on these days from, you know, the COVID shutdown and things like that. I think we are still going because it's more detrimental if kids don't play right now, because I've seen the depression, anxiety, suicide from a lot of kids actually recently, and it's not good. So kids need to get out. They need to exercise. They need to be with their friends. And they need to play sports. I think it's really important at this period of time, especially, to be out there playing. So that's why we started back up 6 months ago. And we were shut down for a while, but it's really important that, and part of our dynamic, that we would like them to be participating. Good for their health.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. They got to have that outlet. But you mentioned earlier about how Coach Westfall had a huge impact on you. Also, your parents, that support system. Is there any other coaches that had an impact on your life as well that maybe served as a mentor towards you?
Yes, actually, your college coach, Art Wilmore, had an impact on me. I became friends with him when I first came into my relationship with the Lord, and went to work at FCA Camp Fellowship Christian Athletes Camp, Thousand Oaks, and that's where I met Art, and we reminisced about those games we played in college and against them, and he was a... He became a good friend and had a good influence in my life. So he was very encouraging and helped me. And just some of my pastors as well, been encouraging and just helpful in my life. And so not only family, but also coaches and other important people in my life have really helped me along the way.
Yeah, I'll give another co-sign to Coach Wilmore. I mean, he was the first coach that really truly invested in me and believed in me and had a huge impact on my life as well. So much love to Coach. But, you know, just speaking, having an opportunity to reflect today, Jeff, and think about your journey, if you could go back in time and speak to a younger Jeff, what advice would you give yourself?
I would encourage myself to know Jesus at an earlier age, because I had to make a lot of mistakes. I became stubborn in my ways and was going down the wrong path for a long time. And I would encourage myself to have that relationship with him, because it's not always easy, even though that happens, but I probably would have avoided some things that kind of took me down for a period. So yeah, I would encourage myself in that for sure, because this life is short, but eternity is forever. It's important to have that relationship, that's my perspective.
And what's next for you?
Just to continue mentoring, building, growing the academy. Hopefully we can get this training center going well, successful, and just affecting more and more kids for the better, you know, and being a positive influence in their lives, and be content as well with everything and in all situations. But, you know, I'm just thankful. I want to be grateful every day I have life on this earth, and look forward to the future.
Well, we are grateful for you and for your time today. And we're excited to see all that'll come from the Friar Academy in the months and years to come. But one more fun question, Jeff. When you are in the zone and maybe during practice or during your workouts, what's on your playlist?
On my playlist? What do you mean playlist?
Your music playlist. What do you listen to? What do you rock out to?
Well, I don't work out. I usually walk, surf, or hike. I don't play basketball anymore. I shoot around with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But so I don't really listen to music on the water when I'm surfing. But I like contemporary Christian music. Personally, that's what I go to. Chris Tomlin, guys like that. And that's just changed over the years, but that's kind of my playlist.
Yeah, I like it.
So you listen to music while you surf?
No, I don't. I can't.
I was about to say, because I'm just thinking of not focus, maybe a shark.
No. You know what I mean? Maybe there's a new like Apple headphone or something.
And Drew, our 21 listeners know that you have a very different relationship with water and water-related sports. So,
how's that? Are you good?
No, I prefer just laying on the beach and watching you from a distance and cheering you on from the sand, for sure. I'll leave the surfing to you, my man.
That's awesome.
But yeah, we appreciate your time, Jeff. It's been great to catch up. It's been way too long. Thank you for coming onto the show, and we know that your story has inspired some of our listeners out there. So we thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always great to catch more often. I need to get one of those shirts too. I'll give you one of mine.
That's a fair story.
Thank you.
Executive Director at Friar Basketball Academy, Jeff Friar.
Thanks to everyone for tuning in. To the athletes, keep being the best you can be. Run your race with excellence. To the parents of athletes, let's continue to support our children with patience, grace, and understanding, learning to recognize how to truly become the guides and the stewards that we are supposed to be. To everyone, be willing to share your experiences to help others along their paths, and always be open to the wisdom that comes your way.
For more information about the 21 Podcast, 21 Media, and services provided by Train Harder 21, visit the website at drewlasker.com. And follow us across all social media platforms. Remember to add this podcast to your playlist, subscribe, rate, and review. Until next episode of 21, train harder.